This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. Smallpox. It's caused millions of deaths worldwide, and it produces gruesome pictures of people disfigured. But after a global vaccination effort in 1979, the World Health Organization declared smallpox to be eradicated. The last known case of smallpox was diagnosed in 1977. However, live samples of the virus live on, stored in carefully guarded freezers in Russia and the U.S. And next week, world health experts are scheduled to meet to discuss whether or not it's time to finally destroy these samples and remove the virus from the earth. Well, not everybody thinks we should destroy these samples. Inger Damon is head of the Pox Virus and Rabies Branch at the CDC, Centers for Disease Control. She argues that the time is not yet right to destroy the last live samples of smallpox virus. Welcome to the program.
Thanks, Ira.
Why shouldn't we get rid of it? What's the point of having it around?
I think the work that we've been doing over the past 15 years has been designed to make our country and all countries more prepared if smallpox does reemerge. And that's a specter that's been raised by, in fact, the people involved in the eradication program. So D.A. Henderson was one of the primary proponents that we needed to be concerned about the potential bioterror use of this virus.
So you think that people might be bioterrorists, might be hoarding samples of it, and we would then lose our own sample to work with if we needed to?
I don't think I know the specifics of who might have what, but I think the possibility that if this virus ever did reemerge is really a horrific one. Currently, less than 50% of our population has been vaccinated ever against this virus. We're seeing an increased incidence of other related pox virus infections, likely because of the cessation of routine vaccination in 1980 when the eradication of smallpox was declared. So materials were collected and stored by the World Health Organization thinking that there could be additional research needs to use this virus. And there's been limited use of it since eradication was declared in 1980. Initially, sequencing was done in the 1990s and some initial antiviral screening. And it's really in 2000, after the Institute of Medicine report and discussions with the World Health Organization in 1999, that we ramped up the research agenda. And we really wanted to look at applied research, which could help us develop diagnostics to detect a disease, antivirals to treat disease, and less reactogenic vaccines to prevent disease.
Now, we have a vaccine, right? There are antivirals. Why do we still need to learn anything from it? And what is there that we could learn from it? I mean, we have its DNA, don't we? We would not build it from scratch if we had to?
Well, that's actually even a more frightening idea, I think. I don't think we'd want to build it from scratch. I think that sets a precedent that is one that I don't think we really want to entertain. I think it's important to use the remaining materials we have wisely, and I think we've made tremendous progress in antiviral evaluation. There are two products now which are in advanced development. They've in fact been used investigationally for the treatment of some severe smallpox vaccine-related adverse events over the past 5 years. And those individuals have survived those diseases. But they haven't yet made it through the final stages of licensure. And not knowing what might happen, I think it's important to continue to evaluate looking at other drugs and seeing if there might be additional products which may have activity against the virus. And that's been part of the research agenda of late.
Well, let's talk about some of the politics here. There are labs, one at the CDC, one in Russia that have samples stored there. There's the meeting that's going to be going on at the World Health Assembly. What is the politics of doing away or storing it between countries, between scientists? What's going on here?
That's a good question. And I can't say that I truly know all of the politics. Mm-hmm. What I can say is that scientifically and from a public health perspective, there's really two camps of folks. There's folks who think that it is safer to continue to keep some of the remaining virus under quite secure storage facilities and to continue to do limited research until we all feel globally that we have achieved the protective measures that we'd like to develop. And mm-hmm. so that would be the diagnostics, antivirals, and vaccines. Mm-hmm. There's other folks who look at it and say, you know, just having the virus in these freezers makes us uneasy. And even if they're kept securely and they're inspected, we think that the better option is to simply to destroy the virus. And as you say, if you needed to make the virus, you could potentially recreate it, as synthetic biology right. has significantly progressed over the past 10 years. And certainly other fairly large organisms like mycoplasma have in fact been regenerated through synthetic biology.
With talk about reviving of the Cold War between Russia and the U.S. over other politics, is there a certain feeling that, you know, we might say, hey, let's decide we'll both destroy it, and how will we know that you don't destroy your side if we destroy our lab samples?
Yeah, and that's a great question. I mean, back when the materials were ostensibly consolidated into the two repositories, the one in the United States and the one in Russia, there was no concerted effort at that time to verify that all materials had in fact been collected. And so there's a little bit of uncertainty about what might exist in some of these older freezers, in some of these laboratories where diagnostics had been done for smallpox.
Mm-hmm. Tell us what it looks like, of a sample. Is it on a test tube? Is it sealed in a container? Is it visible in a freezer? What does it look like, a stored sample?
Well, I guess for anybody who's been in a scientific laboratory, we tend to use these small plastic tubes or polymer plastic, which mm-hmm. are stable in a very cold environment. Those tubes contain small amounts of liquid material, which is frozen back. And the tubes are contained in boxes and racks and then stored away in a freezer in an inventory system.
With a lock and key on them. The door.
With lots of locks and keys.
And if you destroy it, what do you just take it over to what? You throw it into a disposal? How do you destroy it?
Well, what has been done in the past when materials were destroyed as opposed to being consolidated, they were put in an autoclave. So that's sort of like a giant pressure cooker.
Right. And do you have witnesses and signings of papers and things and verification and all that stuff?
I'm sure there will be witnesses and signings of papers and ceremonial to-dos.
So how much stuff physically is there? Is it one vial per country, or what kind of quantity are we talking about?
I think there's some material which is remainders from clinical specimens where in the late 70s, at the end of the eradication program and the intensification, lots of clinical materials were coming in to make sure it was smallpox or was it chickenpox or was it some other disease, and really trying to make sure that disease had been eradicated. And then there's some materials which have been grown and amplified and used for the sequencing and antiviral evaluation and vaccine evaluation. So, again, there's a limited amount of material. It's usually contained in one or two freezers.
Mm-hmm. But you're saying let's not do that. You're saying let's keep it around and we'll have it there. It'll be safely locked away. And if we need to study, if there's another outbreak, we have a sample and we can study it and be better off that way than having to recreate it from genetically.
Yeah, so I think we're still at a point where we haven't achieved our goals. We'd like to have licensed products, which are easy to use. Right now, we have investigational products, which certainly can be used and have been used. But the ability to use them quickly in a response is more cumbersome under that investigational use. So there's lots of time where you need to talk people through the risk benefits. Whereas if you've gone through the full licensure status and regulatory groups have reviewed it, then they've actually already done all that work and they're putting their stamp of approval and saying, this meets the standards that we would think that this material can be used safely.
Dr. Damon, are you going to be at that meeting?
I won't be at the meeting, but I've certainly helped talk to folks who will be at the meeting.
Mm-hmm. Are they, do they seem confident that that your view, your side will prevail? Or what are the odds you're going to give us on this?
I'm not a betting woman.
Yeah, well, but do you, you're obviously hopeful that just you'll be able to preserve. And history is on your side, at least.
So far, I think history's been on our side, and that's enabled us to make the tremendous progress that we've made since 2000. I think we'd like to get past that goal line and a point where we feel like we've really been able to contribute to the global community diagnostics that can be easily used, not just nucleic acid diagnostics, but also protein-based diagnostics, antivirals that we know how they perform or have a good sense of how they perform, and less reactogenic vaccines.
I get it. Thank you, Dr. Damon, for taking time to be with us today.
Thanks very much, Ira.
Inger Damon is head of the Pox Virus and Rabies Branch at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention in Atlanta.